Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. Today's show features Seth's conversation with Kumail Nanjiani, the star and co-writer of the new movie, The Big Sick. Kumail also takes a few more questions backstage for this podcast. But first, a closer look.
Senate Republicans finally unveiled a draft of their health care bill today after weeks of secret closed-door meetings, and now they want to rush it to the floor for a vote as early as next week. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. As the GOP tries to jumpstart its agenda in Congress, President Trump seems to be feeling a little emboldened. Last night, he held a campaign-style rally in Iowa where he was about to repeat his infamous claim that he's done more in office than any president in history, although this time, he caught himself, sort of.
We've produced so much legislation. I don't think any president, it could be somebody, I have to be a little careful because they'll say, he lied. So few presidents, few, just have to be a little careful, because they'll say, headline, Donald Trump lies to the people of Iowa. I don't want it.
You think it would be a headline if you lied? It would be a headline if you didn't. No matter what else was happening, that would be the biggest story in the country. Donald Trump doesn't lie, also cancer cured, page 8. Of course, Trump has actually signed none of the major legislation he promised in his first 100 days, let alone the first 5 months. One of those signature promises was, of course, the southern border wall, an idea Trump seemed to revive last night with an interesting new twist.
We're talking about the southern border. Lots of sun, lots of heat. We're thinking about building the wall as a solar wall so it creates energy and pays for itself. Solar wall panels, beautiful. I mean, actually, think of it. The higher it goes, the more valuable it is. It's like pretty good imagination, right? Good. My idea.
Good imagination, right? He sounds like your college roommate who figured out how to get the Roomba to bring him beers. But there was one moment in particular during Trump's rally last night that was especially eye-opening and revealed a lot, not just about Trump's priorities in general, but his health care policy in particular. The comment came when Trump explained why he had appointed so many millionaires and billionaires to his cabinet.
So somebody said, why did you appoint a rich person to be in charge of the economy? I said, because that's the kind of thinking we want. I mean, you know, really, because they're representing the country. In those particular positions, I just don't want a poor person. Does that make sense?
Yeah, what would a poor person know about economic problems? You can't understand the economy if you're bankrupt. You have to be bankrupt 4 times before you really get it. And that truly seems to be the operating ethos of the Trump era, a president who campaigned on populist rhetoric, but whose policy would cause needless suffering for low and middle-income people. And there's no better example of that than Trump Care. The GOP finally unveiled a draft of their health care bill today after weeks of secretive closed-door meetings. Remember, the House bill slashed Medicaid, which millions of low-income people rely on, to fund giant tax cuts for the rich. And somehow, The Senate made the House bill even worse.
Senate Republicans finally unveiling their draft of the bill to deliver on their long-held promise to repeal and replace Obamacare. The proposal largely mirrors the House bill, including deep cuts to Medicaid, big tax credits for the wealthy.
The Congressional Budget Office says the House bill would cut $834 million from Medicaid. The Senate bill makes even deeper cuts.
If the House bill was mean, the Senate bill seems to be very cruel.
Now, there are some Republicans who claim at least that they are against throwing people off Medicaid like this. So what happened to those Republicans? Well, they didn't even know what was in the bill until it was revealed today. Because Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell was basically writing it by himself behind closed doors. And nobody is ever doing anything good behind closed doors. If your teenage son was locked in his bedroom this long, you wouldn't say, "Hey, buddy, are you doing extra credit homework in there?" In fact, the process for writing this bill was so secretive that even the people who were supposed to be writing it had no idea what was in it. When the Senate first started writing this bill, they announced a working group of 13 senators that included people like Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, Texas Senator Ted Cruz, and Utah Senator Mike Lee. Now, given that he was supposed to be one of the people writing the bill, Lee naturally got lots of calls from constituents asking him, "What's in the bill you're writing?" And on Tuesday, Lee responded to those calls with a stunning admission.
"We've gotten a lot of calls in the last few days from people throughout Utah and across America expressing concerns in one way or another about the health care bill. I've had a lot of people ask me specifically when the health care bill is going to be released to the public, why it isn't public. The short answer to the question is I haven't seen it yet either."
Wait, you're supposed to be writing it and you haven't seen it? That's like your doctor saying, "I think the liver transplant was successful, but I don't know. I was at the movies." Now, several Republican senators have at least feigned concern over the secretive process, but they don't seem to be doing much about it. Like Arizona Senator John McCain, who was asked this week if he had seen the bill and got super sassy.
"I haven't seen it."
"Is that a problem?"
"Oh, no, never a problem. No, of course not. I always like to move forward with legislation that I haven't seen. That's one of the practices I've enjoyed around here."
"Did you get any more clarification today, sir?"
"We had lots of conversations. Every lunch we have conversations. We have more and more conversations. It's wonderful, the conversations we have."
That, of course, is a direct quote from John McCain's book, "Oh, the Conversations We Have." Also, nothing beats old man sarcasm. "Oh, I'm so happy we're all on our phones during Thanksgiving dinner. I hate for someone to miss a chat snap while Grandpa's telling a story about Prohibition." But sarcastic remarks are not going to accomplish anything. If you're genuinely appalled by this bill and the process used to write it, then you need to actually do something about it. Because so far, the man who's running things, Mitch McConnell, is moving full speed ahead with a plan to vote on the health care bill, which was written behind closed doors with no public input, 1 week after unveiling it. In fact, during a floor debate, Democratic Senate leader Chuck Schumer tried to get McConnell to promise that he would at least allow a paltry 10 hours to debate and amend the bill before it's voted on, and McConnell wouldn't even promise that.
"Will it be available to us and the public more than 10 hours before we have to vote for it?
I think
since our leader has said, our Republican leader, that there'll be plenty of time for a process where people can make amendments. You need time to prepare those amendments."
"I think we'll have ample opportunity to read and amend the bill."
"Will it be more than 10 hours? That's
my think we'll have ample opportunity to read and amend the bill."
"I think we'll have ample opportunity to read and amend the bill" is the longest euphemism I've ever heard for go yourself. You can't even guarantee 10 hours of debate? It should take longer to debate a healthcare bill than it takes to binge watch a season of Empire. And to paraphrase Empire, Republicans, if you want cookies nookie, ditch the Mitch. This is a dramatic break from how the legislative process is supposed to work. Of course, when Democrats worked to pass Obamacare in 2009 and 2010, it was a much more normal process, with over 100 hearings and months of debate. Today's process is far worse, and yet you'll never guess how much of what McConnell is totally cool with today he complained about back then.
"The bill we're being asked to consider was assembled behind closed doors, out of sight, without input from the public. Nobody's seen it other than the handful of Democrats that were in the conference room of the majority leader writing this thing in secret. The administration doesn't want to hear criticism because it doesn't want people to know what its proposals will actually do. This is an incredibly unpopular bill. Thus, their only rallying cry, make history. Ignore the American people. What an act of arrogance. They're doing everything they can to jam this bill through. and they don't even seem to care anymore about how ugly it all looks. After all, common sense dictates that anytime Congress rushes, Congress stumbles.
That's right. When Congress rushes, it stumbles. And if that's the case, then the GOP Congress is currently this guy. You can laugh. You can laugh. But Trump just appointed that guy Secretary of Shovels. Now, Republicans can hate Obamacare, but they cannot argue that it wasn't far more open, transparent, and inclusive than the process the Republicans are using now. In fact, President Obama even held healthcare summits at the White House, where he invited Republicans to essentially come and complain about the bill to his face 4 hours on television. McConnell himself was there. In fact, not only was he there, McConnell, the man who wouldn't even tell people what was in the bill he was writing, complained at the time that Republicans weren't given as much time to speak as Democrats, prompting a snappy retort from President Obama.
Mr. President, can I just interject one quick point here, very quick, just in terms of trying to keep everything fair, which I know you want to do. To this point, the Republicans have used 24 minutes, the Democrats 52 minutes. Let's try to have as much balance as we can.
You're right. There was an imbalance on the opening statements because I'm the president.
Oh, snap, Mitch. Just look. We have actual footage at how the gallery reacted to that comment. In fact, while we're talking about healthcare, Mitch, you might need some ointment, because that's a third-degree burn. What we're seeing right now is a breathtakingly cynical process to produce a breathtakingly cruel bill. And not only that, it breaks so many of Trump's promises to voters. The bill allows states to waive out of providing essential benefits like maternity care and prescription drugs, and it slashes Medicaid and subsidies for low- and middle-income people, which would not only take health insurance away from millions, but would also result in higher deductible plans that cover fewer health benefits and cost people more, which, of course, is somewhat surprising given that Trump said all of this on the campaign trail.
I'm not going to cut Social Security like every other Republican, and I'm not going to cut Medicare or Medicaid.
Universal health care.
I am going to take care of everybody. I don't care if it costs me votes or not. Everybody's going to be taken care of much better than they're taken care of now.
You're going to have such great health care at a tiny fraction of the cost.
Wow. I wonder what people will say now that the GOP plans to break all of his promises.
They'll say, he lied.
Yeah, that sounds right. This has been A Closer Look.
Hi, this is Fred Armisen, the music director of the AG Band. Did you know that Late Night with Seth Meyers has a podcast now? That's what this is. And it's released every Wednesday and Friday. Tell your friends who love Late Night that they should subscribe at iTunes.com/LateNightSeth. You'll find it. What I just said, you'll be able to find it. I believe in you.
A Shakespeare in the Park production of Julius Caesar, in which Caesar resembled President Trump, wrapped up its run this Sunday. Conservatives around the country were up in arms about it, and last week, multiple performances were interrupted by protesters who rushed the stage, including one who said they did it to, quote, protect the president's life, which brings us to a segment we call Really with Seth and Amy.
You waited in line to get tickets to a play you already hated, and then you watched it for 3 hours, and then you ran on stage to protest, but not the president, but someone who is dressed like the president, from getting pretend stabbed with a fake knife. Really?
Really?
I commend you. You know, if you want to change this country, you just can't sit around your house yelling at the TV. You have to get out there and yell at a play. Really? You know what? You've made actors so upset that Daniel Day-Lewis has quit now. You made Lincoln quit!
Really?
Yes! Lincoln was a Republican, Seth. A lot of people don't know that.
Really?
Yeah, really.
And really, if this portrayal was offensive to anyone, it's Caesar. Caesar was beloved by the Roman Empire. To put it another way, he won the popular vote. He was so popular, we don't use his name for pizza, we use it for pizza pizza. The only thing Caesar and Trump have in common is they both have casinos named after them. And really, you could tell that Caesar wasn't really Trump because the Senate stabbed him instead of just passing a health care bill.
Also, protest Upstairs, this is New York City. If you want to interrupt a play, bring your grandpa and let him unwrap a Werther's candy for 2 hours.
Yeah.
Because all you did by running on stage was make a Shakespeare production entertaining for once. Really?
Really?
When you pulled your stunt, that audience was definitely buzzed on rosé and this close to passing out. All you did was give them an anecdote to tell at their fancy liberal cocktail parties. You know, I was at the Caesar that was interrupted.
Really?
Really.
Wow.
This is so strange.
Also, side really, Shakespeare in the Park. I don't think it was offensive to have a Donald Trump Caesar, but it was a little hacky. I mean, really, if you want to see a Shakespearean drama based on Trump, just watch CNN. Now, if you wanted to do Mice of Men with Pence's George as Trump as Lenny, I would pay to see that. Tell me about the rabbits, Mike. I hear they're the best rabbits. Really. Also, and this is really important, free speech isn't about just protecting speech you like. So if you think it's terrible to interrupt Julius Caesar, you have to think it's terrible to interrupt Ann Coulter, even if you think she's terrible.
And she really is.
Really. And sure, you can make the argument that she's not Shakespeare, but if you shut her down, you give her power. And if you let her talk, you'll find she's much ado about nothing.
Yeah.
Really.
Really. That's true, Seth. I mean, she gets to speak, too. Liberals cannot be hypocrites when it comes to free speech. Neither can conservatives. So, you know, don't whine about this. Be okay with it when Ted Nugent says, President Obama can suck my machine gun. And using my free speech, I'd like to say, you suck, Ted Nugent. Your songs suck. And Cat Scratch Fever is such a dumbass, stupid song, you dick.
Really?
Really.
Really. Also, this is great. A conservative pundit tweeted that he was going to hold a production of the Salem Witch Trials where Hillary was burned at the stake. Cool, cool, except there is no play called the Salem Witch Trials. You're thinking of The Crucible by Arthur Miller, a play he wrote as an allegory about McCarthyism. There, now you have three things to Google.
Also, guess what, bro? You can't burn Hillary at the stake. She's already been burned twice, 2008 and 2016. My bitch is Teflon now. Really?
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 This has been Really with Seth and Amy.
Our guest is a very funny actor and comedian you know from HBO's hit series Silicon Valley. His film The Big Sick is in select theaters Friday and nationwide July 14th. Please welcome back to the show, Kumail Nanjiani, everybody. So happy to have you back.
Dude, thanks for having me. Very excited to be back.
Congrats on the movie. This is a really funny movie. It's also very sweet. It's emotional. You wrote it with your wife.
Yeah.
And it's basically the story about how you guys met. She heckled you at a comedy club. Is that true?
That's correct. Yeah.
And then your families, you have very different families, but also your wife was in a coma, and this story is about that. Was it weird for you guys to write, obviously, this incredibly personal story about a very difficult time?
Yeah, it was weird because the movie is a comedy.
It's super funny. She's fine. She's backstage.
She's doing great. She's thriving. She's she's just started.
The coma was good for her.
Yeah. She knows a couple more languages now. She can juggle. It was a weird coma. She's totally fine, and it is a comedy. But it's weird because you know you start writing it and you're like, we just want to write a really good movie. It's based on our lives, but we just want to do a good job, make a good movie. But then everyone sees it, and it's very personal, and they all, like, kind of want to have a moment with you. Like, they want more personal stuff. Like, they'll be like, so how's your relationship with your parents now, huh? What's going on now? What makes you cry? Give me a piece of your heart. It's like, it's okay. Calm down.
Every time you make a piece of art, you get feedback, and it's difficult sometimes to take. But is it even harder when it's about your life? And you do play someone named Kumail, so it's not...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some of the preparation wasn't that difficult. But we did do this thing. So what you do is, when you're working on the movie, while it's still kind of rough, you test it. So you sort of get a crowd of, like, pretty random people, and you show them the movie, and then you give them forms, and they tell you what they think of it. And mostly it was good, but I remember one form, the first line was, I don't think people from different races should date. And we were like, maybe we don't need to read the rest of this one. But I love that that person stayed till the end of the movie, like, maybe there's going to be a twist. He might, like at the end, like I toss a quarter into a well and turn white. And they're like, all right, this is good. But what was even worse, Seth? That one was bad. What was even worse was one person was like, I don't believe this guy can get a girl. Because the first one is about that person's ignorance. The second comment is just an assessment of me. Yeah. Like, the first one is about them, but this one is definitely about me. I was like, that sucks. I can get a girl.
Well, you have to play yourself. Your family is played by actors, and the guy who plays your father, fantastic, and he's a big Bollywood star, is that correct?
Yeah, his name's Anupam Kher, and it was his 500th film.
Oh, my God. Was,
yeah.
And was your dad excited to be played by him?
My dad was so, so thrilled. I'd asked my dad, like, who do you want to play you? And he said, Anupam Kher. And I was like, it would be like if you asked your dad, who do you want to... If you asked your dad, and he was like, Rock Hudson. Like, it's just as likely.
Right.
But we got, we got him, and he was really fantastic. And
is your dad a funny guy? Were you guys close growing up?
Yeah, we're still close. He's very funny. He would, like, play pranks on me a lot. Not on my brother, just on me. He would do this thing where he would tell me, he's like, you know, every time you go to bed at night, I don't want to scare you, but under your bed, djinns have a tea party. Djinns are like genie, but like scarier. And he's like, as long as you don't look down there, you'll be fine. He'd also do this thing. He'd record on audio tape. He'd record himself going like, ooh, ah. And then he'd like put it in a boombox and hide it in the house. And then it would start happening, and he would look at me, and he would be like, everyone who lives in the house is here. Who could that be? And then it would be like, Kumail, I'm gonna eat you. And then he would be like, did you hear that? That's terrible news. He was like, you're gonna have to move. And I'm like, where are we gonna move to? He's like, no, he said he was gonna eat you. We just got done paying off the house. Yeah, it was kept me on my toes.
I want to ask about this because I've never heard of this before. Your wife took you to a gentle barn. Is this true?
Yeah, so the gentle barn is this place in California by LA. And what they do is they, it's weird that I was smiling because when you hear the next thing, it's going to make me sound like a real serial killer. they take abused animals. They take abused animals from, like, other places and they bring them to the gentle barn. And you're supposed to pay money to go in and, like, hug and kiss all the animals. Yeah, it's really stupid. but my wife, you know, she really wanted to go. And I'm, you know, I'm a great guy. And, you know. So I pay money, I go in. And all the animals, like, have a name, which is not surprising. But what was surprising... Every animal has a poster. There's a poster that details, like, the backstory of how the animals got there. Like, their origin. Yeah, it would be like, this cow escaped from a veal cage. Or, like, this pig went blind from malnutrition. Or, like, this horse was framed for the murder of a white woman. You know, like... It was really awful stuff. So I'm like, all right, I'm not gonna cry. I'm okay. I'll be fine. I'm a man. I don't cry. Then we went into the goat area. That's where they keep the goats.
Yeah, that sounds sounds right.
Backstory on me: when I was a little kid, I was attacked by a goat. I could tell you the story, but no explanation is gonna lead you to having a less stereotypical understanding of Pakistan.
Okay.
So we're gonna skip that. Okay. So I go in. By the way, have you ever heard what a goat sounds like?
Yeah.
Ah! That's a goat. Ah! On its best day. Ah! Like an old man who tasted hot soup. Ah! I don't know how to use iPads. So I go in, and this goat looks at me like, we meet again. You know, they have a hive mind. But it says... On its thing, on the poster, it says, this goat likes to be tickled under its chin. So I walk up to this stupid little goat. And I tickle him under its stupid little chin. And he, like, closed his eyes as if to say, I thought the world was a bad place, but now I understand love. Oh, my God, I'm going back there. These animals became so humanized to me on the way out. This is true. On the way out, a horse sneezed, and I said, bless you, to it. I was like... And, you know, it got all uppity because, as you know, all horses are atheist and very self-righteous about it. They're like, the burden of proof is on you. I'm like, shut up, horse.
This is amazing. This film comes out on your 10th anniversary. You and Emily.
Yeah.
Congratulations. What a nice piece of fate that is.
Yeah, July 14th is our 10th anniversary, and then that's when it goes wide. It just seems like the most self-serving thing to do. Like, on our anniversary, we're going to go see the movie we made of our love. Look how big it is. Everyone sees it on a big screen. It's like, just make dinner instead at home.
Yeah. You know? I don't know. I think you guys deserve it. Congrats on an incredible film.
Thank
to
you.
Both of you.
Thank you.
It's so great to see you again.
Thank you, Sal.
Kumail Nanjiani, everybody. The Big Sick is in select theaters Friday, nationwide, July 14th.
Hey, everybody, this is Henry. I'm here with Kumail Nanjiani, the star creator of The Big Sick, which is fantastic. So the movie focuses a lot on your stand-up career, and you did a lot of stand-up in your life as well. You started at Grinnell, right? Is that when you were in college? Was that your first stand-up show?
It was my senior year of college. Yeah, I did, like, two sets. I don't say that that's when I started stand-up. Okay. I say I did stand-up twice my last year of college. But then right after that, I moved to Chicago sort of to pursue it, and I knew it was, like, a good scene for stand-up. So.
Yeah.
And then I hit it pretty hard, pretty quickly.
Do you remember jokes from your first time on stage?
This
is a mean question.
I remember, like, one... there was really only one joke from my first two sets. My first two sets were, like, 30 minutes each, which is crazy. It's
hubris. So you've been preparing material for a long time.
Yeah, I decided I wanted to try it about 6 months before I did it. So I wrote for 6 months... that went well, and then I gave myself another 6 months to write another half-hour set, which I did, and that went well. And then there was really only one joke from those two sets that I ever really did in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Who was in the crowd of, like, comedians in Chicago at that time? You must have come up with a ton of comedians that we know now.
Yeah, it was kind of crazy. I mean, Pete Holmes moved to Chicago right when I moved to Chicago. Mm-hmm. Kyle Kinane had been there for a little less than a year. He was doing stand-up. Well, he's from there, but he's been doing stand-up a little bit less than a year. Hannibal Buress, I think, showed up right around then. And then TJ Miller showed up right around then. So it was kind of a crazy scene. We had, like, this really... It's weird to look back and be like, so many of my friends are, like, doing really well now.
Yeah.
And back then, we were just performing for each other with, like, no audiences.
Right. Could you tell them that, like, this was, like, a special group of comedians, or were you just people doing stand-up?
I thought they were all very funny.
Uh-huh.
But I thought this is how it was everywhere. I was like, wow, people are really funny. But, you know, there were also a lot of, you know, I'm naming, like, a bunch of people, but there were, you know, when we would do an open mic, there were, like, 60 comedians who would sign up. So, but it was still pretty crazy. Like, I knew then that I thought, you know, that Kyle and... Pete and everybody, I was like, wow, these guys are really funny, which helped. It felt like, you know, we were actually doing something and not just, like, performing in the back of bars for nobody. It really felt like, oh, we're all comedians.
Right. Did the feeling change from, like, this is something fun we enjoy doing to this is something that we can start making money off of and something we can kind of build a career out of? Or is that the kind of thought process from the beginning?
It wasn't really the thought process for me. I didn't really make any money in Chicago. I would do the local shows.
Where were you? What was your day job in Chicago?
I worked at the University of Chicago.
Oh, right.
I had, like, it was like an office job.
Sure.
9 to 5. It was, like, sort of a, for me, a joyless office job. Uh-huh. Everybody was nice. the school does good work.
Sure.
My job was joyless for me.
Yeah.
Enough caveats? We got it, right? So it wasn't until... So, you know, every year, there was a comedy festival then called the HBO Aspen Comedy Festival and the Montreal Comedy Festival. Mm-hmm. And scouts would come once a year for both of those. So that was the only time that we were like, that was the only time we had a shot at, like, getting something and getting out of Chicago.
Right.
So that's kind of what... That's kind of all it was. So once a year, you'd get nervous
where like actual scouts would come.
Yeah.
There's also like there was a competition that Comedy Central used to have where if you sent in a tape, if they liked it, like you could get on a TV show.
Oh.
I did that. I didn't get on the show. And then I like auditioned for Star Search. But generally, nobody in Chicago was really making any real money or getting any credits or anything.
Right, right. And then you moved here and now you're out in L.A.
Yeah, the move to New York was like the first like, all right, I'm going to really try and do it because I've been doing it for about 6 years in Chicago. Plan was I'd be in Chicago 2 years, moved to New York, but I just got kind of complacent and I was just like performing a lot. But yeah, the move to New York was like, all right, let's see if I can actually try and make this a career.
Yeah. Well, you have. I'm very glad you have. We are very glad you have. It was such a pleasure having you on the show. Thanks so much.
Oh, thank you for having me. This is great.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle at Late Night Seth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And please tell your friends who are fans of Seth Meyers to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loro, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.